PuffloRadio.com.
Yeah.
PuffloRadio.com. Internet Inferno. On demand and live pro in the audio.
You are now tuned into the Pro Flow for Show Show, internationally syndicated, act like you know, with your host, Mr. Mad Max. Pro Flow for Show, www.maxi.com.
Pro Flow for Show Show, wireless phone interview feature presentation.
Pro Flow for Show Show, Pro Flow for Show Show, Pro Flow for Show Show.
Check this out.
Call is now being recorded.
Oh, I love when I say that. Okay.
That means technology is working.
Oh, man, it's great. Okay, so I want to thank you for joining us, and I'm speaking with Jen Hancock right now. And Jen, where are you from?
I live down in Florida, sunny, sunny Florida. And the weather is great. Thanks for asking.
Yeah, man, you are definitely blessed to be living down there. I'm in Ohio.
Ah, yes, it's getting cold.
Yeah, I'm not going to complain because we're used to it. But anyhow, Jen came to the show to talk about a very specific subject that's very vital for our youth as well as adults, because I think it kind of transcends. People sometimes never grow out of it. But bullying is where the issue is today. Now, Jen Hancock is an author, a humanist, that's what it says, an activist. Jen, can you tell the audience where they can find you on the internet?
Sure. You know, if you're interested in the work on bullying, go to thebullyvaccine.com. And it does occur both for children and adults. I just answered and did an article on workplace bullying, actually. So the best place to find that information is thebullyvaccine.com.
Love that that theme, that title, The Bully Vaccine. It says that you wrote a book basically called The Bully Vaccine. Is that correct?
Yes, I have a book and I have an at-home toolkit. So if you have a child who's dealing with chronic bullying situation, the book will give you the basic overview of the technique, which is operant conditioning. And then the toolkit will provide you with worksheets and workbooks to work through to create an actual strategy that you and your child can use and bring to the school administrators to get them, you know, recruited in to help properly so that you can actually get the bullying to stop. And that's the goal, you know. The reason I titled it The Bully Vaccine is because it's actually possible with young kids to teach them this skill so that they're not the sort of kid that gets bullied in the first place, which is ideal. And then it also has information on what to do if you're being bullied, what to do to get it to stop. And again, this is good for all ages, including, you know, dealing with obnoxious people in the workplace.
It sounds very very productive. It sounds preventative and it sounds corrective, you know.
Yes, exactly.
Awesome. It says that the book is designed to help parents vaccinate their kids against bullies and other obnoxious, petty people by preparing them for, like, effectively inoculating themselves against the worst behavior out here. Now, why did you write this? You know, why did you start this?
Well, you know, there's a lot of suicides recently, and, you know, I was taught this by my mom. I was never bullied. Now, I had an underbite. I was a band geek. I was an intellectual. I should have been bullied and teased, but I was, you know, I was freshman year of high school with an underbite and a weird looking face. I was elected drum major of the high school band, which is like a senior thing, right?
Yeah. Okay.
But it turned out as an adult, we're on Facebook, I find out my nickname was Fearless Leader. I had no idea. But it makes sense in hindsight because I was fearless. I wasn't afraid of people. And the reason I wasn't afraid of people is because my mother had taught me how to respond to obnoxious people so that they leave you alone. And when you learn that, you're not afraid of anybody because you know how to handle them. And I've taught this to my son to protect him. And I realized with the suicides, it is immoral of me to just protect my own son and my own family and not share this information when kids are dying.
Right.
So I decided to write the book and share this because it works. It's easy. You can teach it to a kindergartner and they get it. You know,
right.
It's kind of like, you know, we used to teach kids to swim by throwing them into the deep end of the pool and saying sink or swim.
Right.
Well, a few of them would figure it out, and most of them would need to be rescued and then taught the actual skills, right?
Right.
And nowadays, we teach kids how to swim by saying, you move your arms, here's how you blow bubbles underwater. There's a whole set of skills that we can teach them. It's the same thing with bullying. This is a learnable skill. It's easy to teach. There's no reason not to teach it. Of course, it requires us as adults and as parents, as the first line defenders of our kids, to learn this information that no one taught us so that we can teach it to our kids. And beyond that, we need to teach it to other people and spread the word on this, because like vaccination against disease, it doesn't mean you're not going to come in contact with bad people. You are. But you're going to know how to handle them. And the more people that know how to handle this effectively and compassionately and responsibly, the less people learn how to do this. Because let me tell you, bullies do it because it works. They get something out of it.
Yeah.
You know, and the only way to get it to stop is to remove all their rewards. Well, how do you do that? You train up enough kids that they don't reinforce bad behavior amongst each other.
Makes a lot of sense, honestly. Now, how did you become a humanist? You know, I mean, you've got a lot of different information out here that should help spread around the world.
Sure. I teach, I'm actually, the bullying book is actually kind of my volunteer work. You know, my actual job is a humanist life skill educator. And humanism is a progressive, let me give you the official definition and then explain it in plain English, okay? Humanism is a progressive philosophy of life that, without supernaturalism, affirms our ability and our responsibility to lead ethical lives of personal fulfillment that aspire to the greater good of humanity. In plain English, what that means is, as a humanist, I intend to live my life fully. I intend to live it loving other people, not just a few people, but the whole world. And I intend to leave the world a better place when I die. That is my goal in life. And by the way, I wrote that motto for myself when I was 11. Now, how did I come to this philosophy? I was raised as a humanist. Now, we didn't use the term, but I'm a third-generation free thinker on both sides of my family. So my dad's family was, you know, free thinkers out of Chicago. They were involved with the formation of the Republican Party and Abraham Lincoln and the abolition movement, the free thought side of the abolition movement and the women's rights movement of the 1800s. You know, my family
Thank God.
I know exactly, right? And my mom's side of the family is third generation free thinker as well. And they're migrant from Belarus, Jewish migrant out of Belarus. So, but, you know, religion was just never, you know, I have religious relatives. I have Catholic relatives and Jewish relatives and stuff.
Yeah.
But what I was taught is it doesn't matter what you believe. It matters whether you're a good person.
Mm. I agree.
And yeah, exactly. So, you know, for my personal thing, I'm not a believer, but I don't have a problem with other people who do, as long as they respect my choice as a person who has the right to think freely for themselves.
Totally. Totally makes sense. But, you know, you sound so polished and so educated with this humanist approach. And I'm looking at another publication, I believe, says The Humanist Approach to Happiness, Practical Wisdom. Can you give me a little overview of that?
Practical Wisdom, yeah. Basically, I wrote that because one of my neighbor's daughters came to me and she was complaining that her boyfriend hadn't called her in a while. And upon questioning, it turned out to be a boy she had sex with and never dated. And she was completely shocked when I told her, this boy's not your boyfriend, and he's probably not going to call. And she just was completely shocked. And I thought, you know, this poor girl, her mother has failed her by not providing her with basic information about what it means to be in a relationship, what it means to date, and how sex fits into this whole the whole thing, right? I mean, she did not know that she was not dating this guy that she'd had sex with and never dated. She didn't know the difference between dating and sex. She didn't know. I thought someone ought to write a book for kids like this whose parents failed them with the basics of life.
Right.
What do you need to know?
Are you still there? I'm sorry.
Yeah, I'm still here.
Picking up a little bit. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Okay. So, you know, what does it mean to drink responsibly and how do you do that? Well, let's spell that out exactly what that is, because it's kind of like in a bullying situation, stand up for yourself. Well, what the heck does that mean? How do I do that? Right? So I wrote a book and people call it, it's like a handbook for life. And it basically walks you through all the things you need to know, how to make better decisions for yourself in relationships. Who do you want to have sex with? Who might you want to avoid because
right.
they will cause problems for you? Because, you know, sex is great. Let's not pretend it's not. But there are consequences. And our goal should be to maximize the good and minimize the bad. And how do you do that? Well, you make wise decisions and you take precautions to protect yourself from the possible negative, right? And that's not a sex negative approach. That's a very sex positive approach, because it's saying, look, you can improve the odds that something good is going to happen to you and decrease the odds that something bad is going to happen to you by taking responsibility for the potential consequences, good or bad, before you act. This whole think before you act thing. Yeah. Drink responsibly. In order to drink responsibly, you first have to think responsibly before you drink, right?
Your philosophy, your approach is extremely needed in society. I believe if more people were to just think like your approach, just your whole, the way you put it, the humanist approach is like...
Yeah.
I keep saying it over and over because it just makes so much sense. Like, it's kind of just flowing off the tongue naturally. But if more people had the humanist approach, then the world would be probably a better place.
Totally. And here's the thing that, you know, most people haven't heard of humanism or the humanist approach to living life. And what they don't realize is some of the most famous and most influential people in society in the last 100 years have all been humanists. Helen mm-hmm. Keller. Right? The disability mm-hmm. advocate. She was a founding member of the first Humanist Society of New York. Albert Einstein, hello, he was a humanist. Harriet Tubman was a freethinker. Right? These people you don't become an influential person by following the crowd, right? You have to free your mind first. This is what free thought does. You have to free your mind from the self-imposed and society-imposed limitations on how you define yourself. In order to define yourself authentically and to go out and demand that of society, that they respect who you are for who you are. It is not a mistake that the abolition movement and the free thought movement and the women's right movement kind of grew up together in the 1800s. It's not a coincidence that the human rights movement globally coincided with the creation of a humanist movement around the world. And it's not a mistake that, you know, when you talk around the world about human rights and civil rights and social justice and social responsibility in business, that they're talking about humanism as in terms of humanistic business management, in terms of the ability to free yourself from charlatans and people who are trying to scam you out of money.
Right. You know, oh my God. It touches so many bases.
Exactly. It's really the most humane and holistic approach to ethical philosophy that humanity has ever devised. And I was thinking about this today. The reason for that is because there is no dogma. The goal of a humanist is to continually improve how they are as a human being. And if we learn something new and we find out that something we were doing wasn't working or was causing harm to someone or to ourselves, we stop doing it. We don't go, well, that's just the way we've always done it, or it's tradition, or, you know, God said, or someone says, or worse, someone says God said,
exactly.
Right? We just say, that's not working, it's causing harm, let's change. And it's, and for some reason, that's still a radical idea.
Well, like I say, I want the audience to know who was speaking to, because, like, so much, I didn't expect this, potency of wisdom in a way. I'm speaking with Jen Hancock. You can go to jen-hancock.com.
Just type in Jen the Humanist, and you will find me.
Yeah, you can.
I am on Twitter.
I can look you up on Google.
Yeah, I'm on Twitter. I'm on Jen Hancock Humanist, or just Jen the Humanist, and you will find me. I'm like the first 8 pages of Jen Hancock Humanist on Google. So
you sound like you should be on History Channel or Discovery Channel on some documentary.
I'm actually teaching an online course in free thought, feminism, and human rights for an online group. So, and we do, and we start like in the 1800s, and then we move to the 1900s, and then we're talking about how do we confront bigotry, right? And what is in our minds, in everybody's mind, to deal with a very various types of bigotry that occur in society that we're not always even aware we're doing. You know, how do we do that? And, you know, what do we need to do to free our minds? Because society change doesn't occur just because we want it to. We have to do a lot of work ourselves, on ourselves, to put ourselves into a position. You have to challenge your own thinking before you can challenge society.
Wow. Deep, deep, deep thoughts.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm guilty as charged. I think a lot.
So what else have you done over these years that will be notable for and helpful to the audience?
What was the question? I'm sorry.
Well, you've got so much information. I mean, this just didn't happen overnight.
Right.
I'm sure you've been working up to this point, but I was asking if there were any other projects that you've worked on that would be worth mentioning right now.
Sure. I do a lot of writing on humanistic parenting, how to be a better parent, and personal development in the humanistic leadership field. And I'm also working on a book right now, just went into the first phase of editing, on humanism for businesses, so humanistic business management. But I also have a six-week course. It's like 6 hours of video on what is compassion? Why does every major religion and philosophy in the world throughout history preach compassion? What is it about compassion that makes it the key to all of morality and all of living a happy, fulfilling life? You know, and I go into that in detail. And I talk about personal responsibility in the same depth. What's in it for you to decide to be responsible? Because a lot of times I think we think of being an ethical person in an external way. How are other people going to benefit from us being a good person? But we really need to turn that around and think, how am I benefited from this? And when you start thinking in those terms, you realize I would be an idiot to not be ethical, because the benefits to myself are so incredibly overwhelming to be a good person. That it just, you know, what I say to people is, like, you would be amazed at how much easier your life will become when you make being ethical, truly ethical, a priority.
Mm. They have to put it on the forefront and stop letting it be unimportant or not a priority, I understand.
Yeah, well, a lot of times I think people think it's the big issues, that your ethics are the big right or wrong issues, but those aren't really ethical. Those aren't dilemmas. The real power of your ethics is in the everyday things. How do you treat the old man at the supermarket who can't work the swipey thing?
Yeah. Totally.
You know, how do you return your shopping cart, or do you leave it for people to bump into with their car?
Compassion, you know, sounds like a trigger for love in a way. Like, it's interesting how you're explaining it.
Oh yeah, you know, it's like, if you're not prepared to apply your ethics to the little things or into problems that, you know, you're choosing between the greater of two goods or the lesser of two evils, which is your normal dilemma, you know, how are you going to be prepared for the big issues? I mean, you really do have to spend some time thinking about these issues to be prepared for them, but it does transfer over to your interpersonal relationships. When I talk about compassion, when I talk about responsibility to people, you know, we all want to be in good, healthy relationships. Why? Because it benefits us to have good people around us, right?
Yes.
Well, how do you get those good people to want to be around you? It's not by lying, cheating, and stealing and treating them badly, I can tell you that. But, you know, good people take one look at that and say, bye-bye.
Right, exactly.
Moving on. You know, so if it benefits you, and it does, to have good people in your life, because we are social animals, we need people in our lives, then do what you need to do to be the sort of person that good people will want to be around.
Right.
Otherwise, if you lie, cheat, and steal, guess who your friends are? They're people who lie, cheat, and steal. Does that make your life easier? No, you can't trust anybody who's around you at that point.
Sounds like common sense, but for some reason,
it's
extremely misconstrued. Now, you have so much information to offer, just from a general humanist approach, you know, where it's easy to apply to life. It's easy for us to understand it. It's for every age group. It transitions between each generation or whatever the current culture is, you know, whatever. But what your ideas work, and they're definitely solid and important, especially in my culture, because, you know, those kind of things, like you say, you know, your association, people you deal with, whether what they're doing, and, you know, we're promoting, like, hip-hop, all these negative images, you know, all this things. And you
know what? There is a vibrant Black American humanist community, and it's kind of underground because people who free think are so ostracized within the Black community,
right.
Because
man.
Everything centers around this conformity thing
that
you don't even know they're out there. You know,
exactly.
But there's so much problems with the way women are treated, you know, and the violence against women in the Black community that just really,
right.
It really doesn't even happen in the white community to the extent, I mean, it happens, but not
right.
Like, you know, and women
it's
who
like,
step out
yeah.
And say, no, I am not going to play this game. You cannot treat me like that. The violence against them that's hurled at them verbally and whatnot, and this is basic human rights. You just don't treat people like that.
Right.
You know, and the sexualization and the violence against women to not allow them to control who they are allowed to have sex with and when and at what age. You know?
Right.
You know, I mean, it's just astounding. So, I mean, these are issues that are really, really important to the Black community, and there are Black humanist organizations talking about it, writing about it. One of my favorite writers today is a woman named Sikivu Hutchinson. She's out of Los Angeles. Just look her up.
Okay.
Sikivu Hutchinson, humanist. And she is a feminist, atheist, humanist, Black author, and she's brilliant.
Wow.
She is brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. And I think her analysis of what needs to happen and how it needs to happen and why it needs to happen. Because I don't think you can, I think the mistake society has made up until this point is we have looked at the social justice issues as separate. That, you know, Black equality is separate from the women's issue, which is separate
yeah.
from the LGBT issue, the gay lesbian issue.
Okay.
And we haven't realized that they're just human issues. This is about human dignity and worth. And you either respect the individual as a human being, regardless of who they are, or you don't. And as long as we tolerate within our own communities, whatever that is, you know, I mean, you know, okay, I'm from the white community. Well, if the religious community is being intolerant of people's sexuality, for whatever reason they have, that's my problem. You know, I either allow it or I speak up against it. And to me, it's the same thing, you know, with, you know, I speak up for LGBT youth for the same reason I speak up for my Black friends who get pulled over
right.
for driving Black. And it's the same reason I speak up for women who are being raped. It's a human's rights issue.
Yeah, I mean, it's
a not
lot.
A woman's issue. It's not a Black issue. It's not a Muslim issue. It's not, you know, a sex issue. It is a
right.
human dignity and worth issue.
I love just to hear you say all these different things. Like, nowadays, people are afraid to say Muslim. People are afraid to say Black. Like, a white person's afraid to say Black. You know, it's like, it's just amazing. I love hearing how, you know, comfortable you are with your beliefs and your philosophy and this activism.
Well, you know, I mean, I went to school in Hawaii, and it's a really interesting experience for a white girl to go to school in Hawaii because, I mean, part of it is as a girl, you're kind of used to the subordinate status that women have in society. So being asked to be subordinate to someone is kind of second nature to women because we grow up with that. All right. But watching white men come to Hawaii and be subordinate because they are in the minority and they get pulled over for being white in Hawaii.
Really?
And watching them have to deal with that because they're not used to it because they're used to being the dominant culture
wow.
is a real eye-opener. And I'm thinking, what part of this is not, you know, I roll over for this because I've been enculturated to roll over for it in
right,
the same
right.
way that Black people are kind of enculturated through years of this happening to them, you know. And
yeah.
and but in Hawaii, they kind of deal with it with humor. It's, you know, whites
yeah.
are Haoles, Blacks are Popolo. You know, every group has a negative, you know.
Right.
And Haole is the equivalent of the N-word in Hawaii. So,
right.
like, oh, yeah, it's pretty funny. I'd be I was working at a store, and I had an old man trying to tell me who he'd been working with, and he didn't want to say Haole because it's
oh.
like telling a white person, you know, a Black person, the N-word, right? It,
wow.
it was an N-er. And, but he, so he whispered it yeah, because he didn't know the word white.
That's just amazing, though. I mean, like, I learned so much just, because I'm looking for more out here. You know, I'm not comfortable with, like you said, the way the world is, the way the conformity of my culture. I'm not comfortable with that. I'm not comfortable with a lot of things. So I'm out here looking for things. I never thought that Jen Hancock was going to give me this interview. Like, Jen, you need your own, you need to be on FM radio or on TV somewhere because you have, like, this ability to give this information in a way that people can understand and use if they just get a chance to hear you one time for 1 minute, you know.
Sure, well, I appreciate that. That's really sweet of you to say. I got to just say, what I'm saying isn't new. There have been prophets in every culture and in every time saying the same thing, appropriate for their times, and they're the people we remember throughout history. You know, these are the philosophers we remember, whether it's Buddha or Socrates or Jesus or whoever, you know, Mozu in China and Confucius in China and Buddha and Caravaca in India. You know, these are the names that Socrates and Epicurus and Democritus, these are the names we remember. Why? Because they're all telling us the same thing throughout history. All I'm doing is telling you again, there's a reason why all the great philosophers throughout history preached this exact approach to living life ethically and why that's important. And it's not something you just do for expediency, and it's not something that takes effort. It makes your life easier. You do it because it makes your life easier, and it makes the world a better place at the same time. Bonus.
Man, powerful. Very powerful.
It is. And all I feel like I'm doing is translating it, you know?
Yes. Giving you a little spin to it, a little flair to it. That's great. We appreciate it. We need it. You know, there's so many people out here that are needy, and they knew you were out here, they may come find you because they get
I have a blog and a podcast where my goal in life is to help people be better people. I figure the social justice issues, that is a huge part of humanism. You know, we're equally concerned with personal development and with social justice because our philosophy is really about human development.
Right.
But there's people who in order to do social justice work, you almost have to specialize, right? What my ability is to translate the personal development side of this to help people find the motivation to do the social justice work and to exemplify the ideals that they want to see in society in their daily life. Because if we don't, we got to challenge ourselves before we can challenge society.
It's truth. Now, we did give the audience a lot of information. If there was anything that you wanted them to make sure they took home from this interview, whether it was about your authorship of the bullying vaccine, in which people can correct and prevent bullying.
Sure. I've got two things I want people to do from this interview. One, look me up on the internet, and if you like what I'm talking about, send me an email, join my mailing list, and keep up with me. And again, I can point you in the right direction for whatever niche group you're in to an appropriate community that you can find like-minded people, because I know, you know, black humanists do need to meet with other black humanists, and Mormon humanists, ex-Mormon humanists need ex-Mormons to hang out with for the exact same reason. The life experience, they just need someone who understands it. Like, you know, I haven't experienced that, so I'm not the best person to, I can point you in the right direction to people who can relate to you. The other thing that I want people to do is the bullying thing, all right? This is so important. Imagine if we can teach a whole generation of kids not to bully.
Man,
how to handle obnoxious people. Imagine if an entire level of people, all the kids now learn this. What is society like 10, 15 years from now when those kids grow up and they know how to handle difficult people with compassion and respect? And to get the difficult people to not be difficult and to train those difficult people into more effective ways and more pro-social ways of being. Because the reason kids bully is because, you know, they push buttons and they go, I can be mean and this works, right? What if they never learn that? What if it never works? 10, 15 years from now, what is society like? Right? So what I want people to do is I want them to get my book in the paperback form. I want them to read it, learn it, teach it to their family and to their friends, and I want them to donate it to a school or a public library and pass that information on.
Yes.
Let's make this a global thing. Get it out there. Teach it, learn it, pass it on.
Okay, well, I love that idea. You know, with this in mind, I've been thinking about different ideas, and you know, considering you were so nice to help me get this done, I want to be able to put like a commercial together for this. So I'm going to use some of your interview today to build a commercial for this.
Well, I appreciate that. That would be really, really helpful.
Oh, cool. I'll send it to you too, so you can use it if you want, so you can send it out to people if you like.
That would be awesome.
Let's see. Did you want to thank anybody? Shout outs, as they call it.
Let's see. Shout outs. My husband and my kid, who are so nice to let me do this interview right now.
Well, I appreciate it.
And everybody who's ever been mean to me, because I've learned from you. I might not have liked it at the time.
Right.
But I came away learning something about myself, you know, that was helpful, ultimately. Am I the perfect person? No, not yet. Probably never will be. But, you know, I'm better at dealing with adversity than I was 10 years ago. So,
That's totally right. Man, that's awesome. I'm gonna plug your number on my phone because I said, the information you gave me, just the way you gave it to me, I've never had an interview with this. If I don't follow up,
okay,
I will have wasted such a jewel, you know. So, I'm not sure when you'll hear from me, but I know I got a few things to do this weekend, and I'm going to keep you in mind, and I'm going to try to get this interview mixed to the master and ready to go, you know, Monday. So,
okay, cool. I got to go to Buffalo this weekend anyway, so.
Oh, it's cool. I'm going to be sending you an email. You probably won't hear from me from phone for a while, so I formulate my ideas on how to collaborate you on a regular basis
on
without any stress. But,
sure. Not a problem. And like I said, you know, a commercial for the bully vaccine project, the lottery donation, that would be awesome. It would be freaking awesome.
No problem. I'm going to use your own voice on there. I'll put my voice on there just as the commentator, but it'll be a segment on there where you'll hear you're actually talking about the bully vaccine. And I'll grab the best part that I can, and I'll put some music behind it. I'll put your website on there, of course, the bully vaccine website.
Cool.
And then basically we'll go from there. I'll play it on the radio, so I'm going to see if I can keep contacting you maybe once every so often, and then do like a brief, like maybe 5-minute interview, and get a subject that you can speak on for about a minute or so. And
here's the thing. If you have a subject you want me to opine on, you know, we can do it that way. If there's something in the news that's happening and you want to know, what is the correct response to this? What is the ethical way we should approach this as humans, as good humans? You know, that's probably the best way to do it.
That's cool. I see a possible reoccurring segment on my show that features you and your humanist approach. So, I mean, I would think that would be an amazing kind of thing. I mean, I'm sure you already got stuff like that going on, but my people need to see that. We need that so bad. So
And like I said, the other thing I can do is I can put you in touch with the Black humanist community, because they're different.
Yeah.
They're inherently different from the Black atheist community, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it does.
I mean, they're both important, but you know, the Black humanist community is more in tune with the social justice work that needs to be done.
Right.
Then I think the Black atheists are fighting. They're fighting another battle that needs to be fought. So both are needed, but you know what I'm talking about.
That's controversial with the humanist approach. I'm sure of that. But we'll definitely take care of that. So I do appreciate it. I'm gonna let you go now. But I got this information.
Let me just throw this out there to you, because it's something I've been thinking about, and it came up in my reading of Sakibu Hutchinson. Is one of the things she talked about is that mental health care, well, it's stigmatized everywhere, but it's particularly stigmatized in the Black community.
Mental health care,
and it needs to not be stigmatized. I mean, that's, you know, one of the big things about that, you know, just talk about it commercials.
Right. I got a friend that, you know, I've had a few friends that went crazy, and I didn't understand it back in the day when I used to ask my dad, why is that man walking up down the road like he's crazy, you know, how did he switch when he was going to high school with you at one point? And I've grown up, I've seen it, have friends, and I'm like, and they won't go get mental health taken care of. They won't take care of it, you know?
We have to normalize it in all communities, basically.
Right.
All communities need to normalize this. And, you know, I was looking at, like, Black psychologists in Florida. There are all of 7 Black psychologists in the state of Florida. You know, my community, my two-county area has something like 37 members of the Association for Humanistic Psychology. Right?
Wow.
None of them are black. There's no black psychologists in my area. You can find one in Orlando, one in Miami, one in Tallahassee, one in Jacksonville, and one in Fort Myers. I mean, it's just insane. I'm like, seriously? People aren't going into this line of work when that community needs it badly?
Oh, we really need it. I mean, you see so many of us out there just wandering, like, or even, you know, I mean, even if family members taking care of them still, you know, eventually that option's going to come to an end and they're going to be just kind of out, just in a bad position. It's just sad.
So, yeah, that's something I'd like to talk about. And again, like I said, I can put you in touch with other people to interview.
If you or anyone else you know would like to have their poetry, music featured on the Pro Flow for Show Show, hosted by Mr. Mad Max, check us out, www.maxheat.com. Don't be left out. Don't be the last to know. Spread the word. It's Pro Flow Radio. If you or anyone else you know would like to have their poetry, music featured on the Pro Flow for Show Show, hosted by Mr. Mad Max, check us out, www.maxheat.com. Don't be left out. Don't be the last to know. Spread the word. It's Pro Flow Radio.